Support for IPR comes from Patrick Furry Law, a business law firm offering technology agreements, intellectual property law, privacy law, and more. Proudly supporting quality local journalism. Online at patrickfurrylaw.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've had some warm days, we have thankfully had some rain, and now for many of us, it is time to think about mowing. To help us do the thinking, Adam Tomes is here, turf grass specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
So this time of year, we see this sort of explosive growth on our lawns. When do we know it's time to start mowing?
Well, typically we want to make sure the ground's firmed up, which it is. And then, you know, once you have growth of the plant, then it's a good time to start growing. You don't want it to get super tall. So typically we say, you know, you never want to remove more than 1/3 of the leaf tissue in a single mowing. And so if you keep your yard at 3 inches, when it gets to 4 inches is a good time to start mowing.
All right. And of course, peer pressure comes into play here as well. Once your neighbor starts mowing, suddenly it feels like the clock is ticking, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I know last week in my neighborhood, one neighbor mowed, and within, I think, 2 days, it seemed like everybody had to mow. So it's kind of one of those that you're going to keep up with the neighbors.
So we have seen a movement in recent years for no mow May and for people developing more pollinator friendly lawns. It feels like that movement is morphing a little bit to a more focused effort to plant things that are pollinator friendly as far as just let lawns go wild. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know, I would prefer that you continue to mow. Just set your mower as high as it will go if you're, you know, concerned about wanting to keep around blooming plants underneath. A lot of the early spring bloomers, dandelions, white clover, wild violets, those will all continue to bloom even if you're mowing at 4, 4.5 inches during the month of May. And because if you don't mow at all for a whole month, especially during the month of May, then you get in a situation where the grass just grows really tall. You're going to go in and basically cut it in half, overstress it, and then it'll die out. So you're kind of removing your goal there of, you know, trying to provide a pollinator-friendly area. So just set your mower really tall. You won't have to mow as often, and you'll still have the pollinator-friendly plants blooming underneath it.
All right, and you're less likely to get a citation from whatever community you live in. How often do you mow?
Yeah, so I'll mow this time of year. The grass is having a flush of growth. The growing conditions are perfect, especially with the rain we're going to get. And so you're going to probably mow around every 5 days or so. And then that'll slow down as the temps warm up and it gets a little bit drier to something like once every 7 to 10 days.
All right. And you mentioned if you keep your lawn at about 3 inches, tell me what you consider to be best practices.
Yeah, so I typically say 3 to 3.5 inches is best practice. That's a good height for the plant. It's not stressed. Once you start to get below 3 inches, then you're going to need to start to add some additional inputs. So that's where you'd have to add some water more often. You're going to have a little bit more pressure from weeds, so you'd have to up your fertilizer rate. So 3 to 3.5 inches is a really good height for yards to for the grass to not be stressed. And honestly, a lot of the plants. So you'd have a dense area, and so that would keep down some of the mud in your yard as well, because the plants aren't as stressed. And then mow it, you know, every time you have a third of the height in growth, then mow it.
When you mow, do you have any other best practices that you try to keep in mind? I know that a lot of people have their systems for how they like to mow, the direction they like to mow, alternating directions between each mowing. What are your rules of thumb?
Yeah, a couple other things that are really useful to keep in mind. Number one, recycle your clippings. Those are free nutrients. And so when you mow, put those back into the yard, and that's free fertilizer for the yard.
All right. When you say put them back into the yard, that means you just don't have to bag them at all. The mower is going to take care of that mulching, right?
Yep. Just let the mower mulch up those clippings. And then the other thing that's really good is to alternate directions. So go different directions every time you mow. So Maybe one time you're going to go north-south, the next time east-west, then on a diagonal. And that just kind of spreads the traffic pattern out in the yard, so it's not always going the same way.
Let's talk about mowers. There are so many different options out there, but no matter what kind of mower you have, it is probably sat in your garage or your shed or your barn all winter long. What do we need to be thinking about as far as mower maintenance?
Yeah, so a couple of things on mower maintenance. The first one is, you know, make sure that you have a clean air filter if you have a gas-powered motor. That's going to let the mower work with less stress. And so go in and check that, clean it out if necessary. Check your oil levels, replace the oil if it's gas powered. If it's electric or gas, no matter what, you might want to send it out the first time and mow and then sharpen the blade after that first mow. That, you know, there's lots of little debris, things like that, that end up in your yard over the winter that maybe you won't spot. And so if you hit that the first time, you know, you're not dulling up your freshly sharpened mower blade. And so mow once, then sharpen the mower blade, and then you're normally good to go for a while on that.
Yeah, how often do you sharpen your blades?
Yeah, it kind of depends on how big your yard is, things like that. But once every 2 months or so is probably a good idea if for a normal average size yard. Just a sharp blade is going to give you a cleaner cut. And that puts, again, less stress on the plant if it's a clean, crisp cut because the plant can heal quickly and then it doesn't use so much water when it's healing.
For early adopters, there were some hiccups with electric mowers in those early years, but it seems like there are a lot more options now. What do you see?
Yeah, there's a ton of options, both from electric mowers where you're with them as well as the robotic mowers. Those are really coming out. Those things are handling hills better. And they've come up in their height of cut, so it's more of a reasonable height of cut. The electric mowers, the one thing to keep in mind is, you know, you're going to have to mow a little bit more often if you get behind. Man, it's going to be tough to catch up there for a little bit. So really keep an eye
on your
height of cut.
Why is that? Just not the kind of horsepower?
Yeah, not the in the battery life on those, it really wears the battery down quickly if you get behind on it. So you're going to have to, you know, mow it several times just to get caught back up.
All right. And let's talk a little bit about those robotic mowers. We've been talking about them for a couple of years now. The first time it seemed futuristic, but are you seeing more and more adoption of them?
Yeah, there's been a huge uptick in those, and it's just predicted to go higher and higher. They cover a greater area now. They're at a better height of cut, so they will mow in that 3-3.5 inch range, and they're more user-friendly. So you can drive them around the outside of your property or in areas where you want it excluded with your phone the first time, and then they can mow inside of that. The one thing to keep in mind there, just like any other mowers, they do have little blades. They're kind of more like razor blades, but those need to be changed periodically as well. And so every manufacturer is a little bit different on those, but read up in your manual and make sure to change those out too.
And remind me a little bit about how they work. You know, with robotic vacuum cleaners, usually those run once a day or in the middle of the night or something like that. How often are these robotic mowers mowing?
Yeah, these are very similar to your robotic vacuums. And so they're set to go out, you know, whenever you want them to, but oftentimes people like them to go out at night. And so they would go out every day and kind of run over the area. They just don't have the horsepower to do it once a week. So you're going to have them go out more regularly, probably daily to at least every other day at the very least.
All right, let's talk about weeds in the yard. Again, there are some people who have kind of changed their tune about what we refer to as weeds in the yard with a movement for more pollinator-friendly lawns. But there are a lot of people still fighting weeds in their yard. You recommend actually knowing what you have out there. Tell me a little bit about your recommendations for weed identification.
Yeah, that's the biggest starting point. I get a lot of questions on what weed is this or what plant is this in my yard. And so that's greatly going to determine, you know, your course of action if you want to control those. And so there's a certain amount of weeds right now that are called annual winter weeds, and they germinate in the fall. They grow in the fall, early spring, and they're flowering, setting seed, and then they'll die out with the summer heat. A lot of those, you know, you really don't have to worry about a ton right now because they're on their way out. And so, you know, if you were going to treat those, I would treat those next fall because they're clearing out right now. A couple examples of that would be henbit and winter dead nettle. And those look a lot like creeping Charlie. And so that's why people get really nervous. But they have slightly different leaf shapes and they do have purple flowers right now. And so they're kind of showy. And so that's why a lot of people, I think, are finding those in their yard and saying, oh, my gosh, do I have creeping Charlie? And so, you know, identifying that is a key. But they're on their way out with the first warm snap. They'll die out.
So not everybody can send you an email and get their weeds identified that way. Do you recommend an app for weed identification, or what do you think the best method is?
Yeah, the Yard and Garden site has some good resources on it. That's really useful for weed identification or sources there. That's where I like to start.
A lot of people also like to fertilize their lawns in the spring. What are your thoughts?
Yep, fertilizing. You know, the best defense against weeds is a well-fertilized yard. We always like to see slow-release type products used. That kind of more evenly feeds the plant over time. It's less chance of a runoff situation. And then it's easier on you, too, because if you put down an entirely quick-release product, you're going to mow yourself till you're sick of mowing early in the spring. So we like slow-release products, and then that makes a denser turf, which makes it, you know, more uniform. It'll hold the soil better as well and give you more drought resistance as well.
All right. And when is the right time, if you choose to fertilize and choose to use slow-release products, when is the right time to do that?
Right now is a really good time to get out a slow-release product and thicken the yard. If you were concerned about crabgrass prevention, you're at the very tail end of it. And so this would be the very backside of that. Like this weekend would be the last that I would say probably you're going to have that window for that.
Adam Tomes, turfgrass specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. For more gardening information and tips, please subscribe to our Garden Variety newsletter. You can find out more at iowapublicradio.org/garden. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR comes from Patrick Furry Law, a business law firm offering technology agreements, intellectual property law, privacy law, and more. Proudly supporting quality local journalism. Online at patrickfurrylaw.com.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. Today is Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me today, Adam Tomes, turfgrass specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University. Also here, Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And we're also celebrating Arbor Day today. So happy Arbor Day. Are you planting a tree in the rain? It's actually a great time.
Yeah, actually, what would have been ideal is to plant the tree yesterday and have it rain today. Sometimes it's hard to dig in soil that's saturated like this.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of people are getting trees into the ground. And we are going to dive into questions here. We already have a lot of lawn questions coming our way. So prepare yourself, Adam. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. But before we go to questions, Aaron, there is an opportunity for citizen scientists to do a little bit of planting. Can you tell us about it?
Yes. Well, there's a multi-state project that Iowa State University Extension is working on with other universities in the Midwest, looking at how people benefit from certain types of plants and those kinds of things. And we have an opportunity for folks to, you get free plants, marigolds and strawberries. And we just ask that you grow them through the summer and fill out some surveys as the summer goes along. And they'll also provide you with some helpful information to be successful with these plants. So you can get these free plants, but you have to sign up. The sign up is due on Monday. So If you go to the Yard and Garden site for Iowa State University Extension, you can find the news article to sign up there in the newsletter and get signed up. The big caveat with this, though, is that the two distribution sites for the free plants are the Scott County Extension Office in the Quad Cities and the Polk County Extension Office here in central Iowa. So you would want to be in that area of the state to participate.
All right. So you can go to yardandgarden.extension.iastate.edu and you can find out more information about that as well. And we do have a lot of questions already. So let's start off with Mary in Center Point. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Good morning. My question is, I picked up a dogwood in a 10-gallon container, and I've understood historically that they really don't fare well, even though they are native. However, I want to try. And we live on a ridge. Would I be better to plant this at the top of the ridge, or would I be better off to plant it where it might have some protection, where it sort of folds down a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Is this the flowering dogwood, like the small tree?
It's a red rover. It's a bush. It's not like a stalk with a top. It's like a lot of branches kind of pulling out. It's a silky dogwood.
Oh, okay. Yes. Some of those dogwoods actually do fairly well for us. And the shrubby ones like that do tend to do fairly well. The ones with the really colorful stems that kind of all originate from the base. They would probably prefer a more protected location. And so the top of the hill, they also don't mind being a little on the wet side. So if you had a wet spot in your yard, that could be a spot where this would perform really well. It's the flowering dogwood that really struggles for us here in Iowa, that's native to the southeastern United States. It's just a little bit too exposed and a little bit too cold in the winter for it. But some of those multi-stemmed twiggy dogwoods, they do quite well.
My moist area has a line of shade, and so I'm torn between, do I go with moist and shade, or is that what I do?
They will tolerate some shade. They will tolerate some shade. They'll be more open, and they will flower less. But the full shade would not be a great spot for it, but it could tolerate part shade.
Okay, so 50-50 would work. I won't take up more time, but thank you very much for your answering my question.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Mary. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Claudia has a question for you, Adam. She says, we went chemical-free in our large Iowa City lawn and garden a few years ago. We have definitely noticed an uptick in the number of happy pollinators around the property. We even officially sighted the endangered rusty-patched bumblebee in our yard the last few summers. But the lawn itself looks poorly. Creeping Charlie and crabgrass has taken over. Dandelions are thick. The turf left is patchy. What can we do to help our pollinator-friendly lawn look its best without chemicals?
Yeah, that's a tough battle that you have. And, you know, crabgrass and Creeping Charlie are not exactly helpful for the pollinators. And so if they're okay with using like a more natural type product, like corn gluten meal, that will do some crabgrass control, that will allow some fertilizer for the yard. Compost would be another source, just something to try to get some nutrients into the turf grass. That would help make it a little bit thicker and try to help outcompete some of those weeds, which would be a good thing. Also, applying some grass seed would help as well.
And tell us just a little bit more about corn gluten meal. We've talked about it a lot in past years, but I still think a lot of people don't know that that is an option for dealing with crabgrass.
Yep, sure. So corn gluten meal is a byproduct of processing corn, which, you know, often goes into many other products. And so it's a fertilizer and also has shown to inhibit some weed seed germination as well. And so it will make the grass thicker, but it will also inhibit some of that crabgrass germination. Now realize that it's not going to solve all your problems overnight, But, you know, using it for several years will allow it to start to thicken up the yard.
All right. And it has been shown to be very effective if it's used regularly.
Yep. Yeah. Multiple years of use, it will be very effective for you.
All right. I hope that helps, Claudia. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Luann is on the line in Johnston. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Charity. Nice to visit with you.
Yeah. What's your question?
Well, we are losing two ash trees, and we would like suggestions for a small native tree that would grow 20 to 30 feet tall.
Okay.
So the first thing that comes to mind is a redbud. That would be on the smaller side of that kind of size that you gave, but that is a woodland understory tree. It also has beautiful flowers right now. Actually, a lot of them are just finishing up now. A lot of our other native, another one to look into would be ironwood. Sometimes it's called blue beech. This is a, has kind of smooth, almost like muscly looking bark. That can be really nice to add in. And sometimes you'll see them sold as kind of multi-stemmed large shrubs, but you can also train them into trees. So that could be another option. A lot of the other ones that kind of come to mind are larger trees than that, the natives that we have, things like hackberry, American linden, the disease-resistant American elms or American elm hybrids, but all of those trees get a little bit larger than 20 to 30 feet.
Okay. One tree that's been suggested to us is a Japanese lilac tree. Would that be a good
yes. tree? Yes. I mean, it's not native, but that would be a nice alternative, as would some of the crab apples. Again, most of those are not necessarily native plants, but they are nice kind of small to medium-sized trees.
Luann, good luck picking from that list. I'm always partial to a redbud tree. They've been my favorite since I was a very small child, but my taste is not universal. You can give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I was indoctrinated as a very small child on the Iowa State University campus, which has the most beautiful redbud trees anywhere, when my mom was getting her master's degree. So this goes way back. All right, let's go back to the phones. Jane is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jane.
Hi, I actually am calling about another ash tree issue. You probably get a lot of calls on that.
Yep.
There's a property. Oh, you don't. Okay, there was a property for sale here in Des Moines that was treated 3 years ago. And at the time, there was no infestation. There's a little tag on the tree, and I called the tree service. I'm just wondering if treatment prevents the death of a tree or just delays the death of an ash tree. And then if it has to be removed, how much does it cost to remove like a 100-year-old spreading ash tree?
Yeah. So the treatments are effective, but they have to be done depending on the product. It's usually every 2 years. Sometimes there are a couple of products, I think, that can be stretched out to three. And there are a few that have to be done every year. As long as you're doing that, it will prevent emerald ash borer from infesting the tree. As soon as you stop, that tree will succumb to this pest. It's a very pervasive pest, and it is very effective at eliminating our native ash trees, unfortunately.
So, Jane, you said that your tree was treated 3 years ago, right?
Right, 3 years ago, and I guess tree service or arborist would have to look to see if it's currently infested or not.
And even if it does have some infestation, as long as you still have at least 30% of the crown, and depending on the product, it could be as much as 50% of the crown hasn't died back, you can still have effective prevention. It's once you get past that threshold that the insecticides don't really help that much. So if the tree still looks good, this would be the year to do it again if you wanted to keep the tree. To remove a full-size mature ash tree, in most cases, is going to be at least $1,000. And depending on its location and how large it is, it could be $15,000 to $2,000. So it is an expensive endeavor. And unfortunately, I also don't know of any programs that help people with the cost of removing trees. If it's in the city right of way, the city should take care of it. And a lot of cities have already. But in your own property, the removal of that tree can get expensive. And it is important to remove the tree. A dead ash tree actually is very brittle and very prone to breaking apart, which can be dangerous. So it is important, if that tree is dead, to remove it. It is a costly thing, however.
Jane, thanks so much for the call and good luck with that. 866-780-9100 is the number. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to Justin with a lawn care question in Dubuque. Hi, Justin.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a dog. I also have a small fenced-in yard. While we exercise the dog elsewhere, the dog's causing some problems in the yard. I'm wondering one of two questions. One, when he digs holes, what should I think about when I'm purchasing soil to replace the dirt that he digs up?
Sure. You want something that matches what's there as best as possible. The last thing you'd want is if you had a heavy clay soil to put a sandy soil in, just because it would drain quicker. So then that would be a dry spot in your yard. So if you can get soil that's as closely matched, that's what I would start with.
This might be an easy question, but how do you look up what kind of soils in your region?
Yeah, you can send it off for a soil test at a soils lab. Your county extension aid office would have a list of soil testing labs that could tell you what type of soil you have. And that would be the easiest way to do that.
Okay. Second question is, when the areas the dog likes to run around in, also the areas where he goes to the bathroom, are turning pretty yellow. We have these like brown patches, and we also have green healthy grass where it's more in the center of the yard. Is it just a matter of fertilizer to heal the grass, or what's your suggestion there?
It sounds like you have a little bit of two different things going. One is the dog's fertilizing those areas probably, and that would be a little bit higher in salts from the dog. So you might want to add a little bit extra water to those areas. That'll help flush some of those salts through. The other thing is, because the dog's probably exercising there, it gets a little bit more traffic in those spots. So I would suggest aerifying your yard and adding some seed regularly to those areas, and that'll help relieve some of that traffic pattern from the dog running back and forth probably in those spots.
And when you say add seed regularly, what are you recommending?
Yeah, so I would probably, in that case, it sounds like the dog's pretty active, so I would probably add some seed in the spring and the fall as well, just to kind of stay after it and keep on top of it.
All right, Justin, thanks so much for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Brenda writes, I can't afford to buy new soil for my outdoor planters this year. Can I add something to the soil from last year to help my flowers grow?
You can use the same potting soil for several years. The kind of the cue to know when to replace it is if drainage gets really poor. What happens to potting soil over time is it breaks down into smaller pieces, and so then it becomes more compact. Adding a little bit of fresh potting soil every year can help with that too. So you don't have to refill the whole container. You can just kind of freshen it up. The thing I would not do is add garden soil to the container. So don't go into your vegetable garden or flower bed and dig up some earth and throw it into the container. That soil behaves very differently in a container. So even the most well-drained garden soil, when you put it in a container, becomes very poorly drained. And so that would not work very well. But you could freshen it up with a one bag of potting soil or just use it again, and that should be okay.
All right, and Tony in Panora says, can I lay down some sod right now, and how much do I need to water it?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tony. And yes, you can lay down sod right now. This is a perfect time to establish it. How much do you need to water it? This weekend, none. I think we'll get plenty of rain. But moving forward, you know, you'll want to keep it watered a couple different times a day for about the first month or so. And so, you know, just kind of run it until you feel like you can walk on it and feel a little bit of moisture come back onto your foot. And then you'll know that it's wet enough, and then hit it again at night.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more questions. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Adam Tomes, turfgrass specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, ISU Extension horticulture specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from IPR News.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me to answer your questions, Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Adam Tomes, Turfgrass Specialist and Assistant Professor of Horticulture at ISU. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll get back to the phones in just a moment. I want to get through a couple more emails here. Brian in Nevada says, I will be doing my first time edging a sidewalk with a gas-powered edger. The edging is overdue, but not crazy out of control. For example, there's about 4 inches covering the sidewalk. What are best practices and what is optimal soil moisture?
Yeah, so that is going to be an exciting project for you. I would say that you want the grass or soil moisture a little bit on the wetter side. It's going to cut into it a little bit better and take small chops at a time as far as that goes. Don't try to cut back the full 4 inches that it's overhanging. So maybe go an inch or two and then another inch or two, and that'll help you. So, you know, if you can get out after today's rain, maybe, I think you might have some pretty good success there.
All right. Good luck with that, Brian. Pat says, can I move some bearded iris now while I'm weeding the bed?
The ideal time to move bearded iris is kind of late July, early August. If you did do it now, you probably would see no blooms this year. It would set it back that way. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world to move it now, but I mean, the whole point of growing that plant are those beautiful flowers, and they're so fleeting. I would hate to, eliminate that for a year if I didn't have to.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Josh is on the line in Grimes. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
What's your question?
I was just calling because my wife and I bought our first home last year, and as we have a Bradford pear in our front yard, and we noticed it had a bunch of rust on all the leaves, and the leaves are starting to come back right now, and there's none right. I don't see any coloration yet. I don't know if it's like a big deal, and if it is, I don't know what to do about it.
It's not a huge thing, and treating a tree like that for diseases is usually not necessary. Bradford pear is not one of our favorite trees. It is becoming quite invasive, especially in roadsides and our native woodlands, and so you're seeing it less and less. I don't know what size this tree is, but, you know, depending on where it is in its life, the other interesting kind of little tidbit about Bradford pear is that I always kind of joke they self-destruct after about 25 years. They have really poor branching habits that are really prone to storm damage. And so depending on how old it is, it might be worthwhile to plan for a replacement. the disease that you're seeing isn't going to be the downfall of this tree. It may look ugly if it's really bad, but it's not going to kill it. But it might be a good idea to find another tree to plant nearby so that when this tree does have to be removed, you have less of an impact on the shade or the plantings in your yard.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Yep. And Josh, are you in Polk County or are you in Dallas County?
I'm in Polk.
All right. So Polk County Conservation is doing a limited trade-in. So if you want to take out your Bradford pear and apply to their program, there may still be an opportunity for Polk County Conservation to give you something native to plant instead. So might be worth checking into. I know they had kind of a limited number of opportunities for that. All right. Let's get now to Stan on the line in Ames. Hi, Stan.
Hi. I have a question about daffodils. I have a lot of daffodils in the yard, and several of the clumps didn't bloom this year. Do I need to move them, break them up, say goodbye?
Yeah, when you see daffodils kind of stop flowering, it's usually because they're crowded. And so moving them, usually you can move them right after the leaves die back in the early summer, or you can mark the location and move them in the fall. The fall is probably a better time to move them, but it's more difficult because it's just harder to find them in the fall. But that would be the best thing to do, is to dig up the clump. You can break it into smaller pieces and replant it in new places, or just spread them out, and that should help them bloom better.
Okay. And then I have a forsythia bush. I have a few of them. Mm-hmm. And I get maybe 6-7 little yellow flowers. Can
yes.
I fertilize it to get it to bloom better?
Fertilizer probably wouldn't help a whole lot. The forsythia is very winter hardy except for its flower buds. And so we often see dieback of the flower buds when we have really extreme winter temperatures. And this year was one of those years where the winter was really tough on the flower buds. And so we just don't see good bloom. It's one of the challenges of growing forsythia in Iowa. That year that it doesn't happen, you realize why you love this shrub. And then all the other times, there's not much more you can do. Fertilizer isn't going to help. If you can protect the plant more, that could help, although that's not typically very practical. So it's just kind of a reality of growing forsythia in Iowa. Some years we have better flower shows than others.
Stan, thanks a lot for the call. Next up, Reggie in Fairfax. Hi, Reggie.
Hey there. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, awesome. Longtime fan, longtime listener. I have started a bunch of vegetables in my little greenhouse in the basement. And a couple of questions. One, I live in Fairfax, which is in Linn County, and I'm wondering, are all the frosts behind me? Okay. And two, I started some arugula, and they're tiny, tiny, tiny seeds. And, of course, I have multiple plants in each little 2x2 square starter set. Do I need to thin those out before I plant them in my garden?
Yeah. So starting with the arugula, you can thin them out a little bit. That might help. It may not transplant as nicely as some of the other vegetables. Arugula and a lot of the leafy greens often do better direct sown into the garden, and they tolerate light frosts. And so you can sow them a little bit early and still have some success. In most years, most of Iowa is done with frosts around the first weekend in May. Looking at the extended forecast, at least for us here in central Iowa, I don't see any below freezing temperatures in the extended forecast going out through the first part of May. And so I can't tell you for sure, but I have a feeling that we've probably made it at this point.
Wow.
But don't quote me on that.
You're going
because
out
I cannot
on a limb,
predict
Aaron.
The weather. I know. But just based on what I've seen in the forecast, knowing that most of Iowa is, especially in southeast Iowa, it tends to be the last weekend in April is the average last frost date. Now, that's just an average. Some years it's later and some years it's earlier. But looking at that, knowing that, and looking at the extended forecast, it does look fairly promising.
I'd be safe then to plant I've got collard greens, I've got some mustard greens.
Those things would be
pretty hardy.
Oh, those things would be very, no problem. They will actually tolerate a light frost. The things that you can't plant before frost are all of the vine crops like squashes, all of the solanaceous crops, so your tomatoes and peppers and eggplant, and things like green beans and sweet corn. The other stuff, all of the broccoli and the cabbage and the leafy greens and the radishes and the carrots, all of those things do fairly well, even if it does dip below freezing. So you're okay.
All right. Reggie, thanks so much for the call. Let's go next to Lonnie in North Liberty. Although, Lonnie, I'm going to warn you that this may be a little outside the specialization of our guest today, but go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. Hi, this is Bonnie, and I'm from North Liberty, Johnson County. And this is maybe kind of a general question. It's about my yard. It's about squirrels in my yard. I have a neighbor who feeds corn year-round to the squirrels, and I just have militant squirrels that inhabit my yard, dig up little divots all over the place, chew up my barn, all kinds of lovely things. So is there something that I could put down that just would make them go, blech, I don't want to be in this yard?
Are we talking about like ground squirrels, like squinnies, chipmunks, or gray squirrels? Ground squirrels. Okay. There are technically some deterrents, although I think a lot of folks don't love using them because they are fairly unfriendly chemicals. The best thing to do is exclusion, so hardware cloth in areas where they're causing a lot of problems, by covering up those areas so that they can't dig. They are a little bit more attracted to recently planted things, which is really the only spot where they become really problematic. If you're having a problem with it and you can't seem to get it under control, I would contact a pest specialist and have them come out and work with you. They do it with bats and mice all the time. They can do it with things like ground squirrels too.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And now let's go to David in Bettendorf. Hi, David.
Hi. So our backyard is a hill that kind of like goes down, levels out, and then goes down again toward a creek. The upper part of it's been a pain to mow, so we just said, okay, bee balm, milkweed, you know, all kinds of stuff, coreopsis, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's filled in nicely, but last year, I want to say it's called canary grass. It's about 4 feet tall, just exploded. I mean, absolutely invaded everything. And I'm not entirely sure what to do to get rid of it. And we don't use chemicals on our lawn. So aside from like digging it out rootstock by rootstock, I'm not really sure if you have any tips or ideas.
Yeah, it's probably canary reed grass, which is pretty prolific. It will be hard to control without a little bit of chemical help. And I say that only because you can do it by pulling and digging. You'll have to be very persistent. It will take some time. And you'll probably have to kind of come to an okayness with having some in the area, because it'll be really difficult to get rid of all of it. So you kind of have to become at peace with having a little bit in there. But hand digging or using a shovel and going out and digging up the clumps when you see them is probably the best thing to do without using any kind of chemical. And you'll have to be persistent, and it'll probably be one of those maybe biannual chores that you do in this area to help keep it under control.
All right. Thank you so much for the call, David. And now let's go to Everett in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Everett.
Hello. Yeah. How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Okay, well, I have an asparagus bed. I planted it myself, and it's been about 8 years. And it's not producing as well as I would like it to. I steal enough for myself and give some away. But I tried planting some new ones, new crowns last year, and this area is kind of low. And I'm wondering maybe if those didn't just keep drowning out, and I've tried it before. Well, somebody told me that to spread your asparagus bed out more, you could take a spade, go right down to the center of the crown, and break it open. Now, what's your opinion? Will that spread it out, or will that kill it?
I think it depends on how established it is. It is a pretty stressful thing to do to the crown of the asparagus plant. And if you don't have a lot of crowns and it's not a very thick patch, it may cause more stress than actually benefit. A really healthy asparagus patch would kind of branch out or you could pull up half of that crown and plant it at a new spot. But one that's not quite as healthy, that might be a little hard on it. Asparagus does benefit from some fertilization. And so you would, whether you use, you know, compost or composted manure, I would apply composted manure after you're done harvesting if you do decide to use that. Or if you use just a regular kind of all-purpose fertilizer, about a pound for every 100 square feet, and you can apply that in the spring as it's coming up, that may help too to kind of give it a little bit more nutrients and hopefully get it better established going forward.
Everett,
The other question I had is it in full sun?
Yes, it is.
Okay. It needs to be in full sun to have good crop too. So if it was in a little bit of shade, I'd say you'd need to move it, but it's in full sun, so that's good.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call, Everett. Here's an email from Diana. We have many black walnuts. Unfortunately, we took out 10 pines that just couldn't survive. Now we need some sort of wind, privacy trees, and shrubs. We like tall arborvitae. Would these survive? What else can we plant there?
Yeah. You know, the root competition from a black walnut can sometimes be really tough. And something like arborvitae wouldn't really do very well with that. They don't love being really dry. If you can get it far, if you have some space and you can back away from it a little bit more, then that could work out fairly well. Another option might be yew. That would be evergreen and would take the partial shade or full shade that's there right now. But again, especially in the establishment period, the first couple of years, you will want to water regularly because an established walnut, actually any established tree, is going to be really competitive with its root system. And so those plants would need help getting established with regular watering to help with that. You know, there's a lot of talk about juglone and the phytotoxicity that can come from walnut. There's actually not a lot of research that shows that it is something that affects garden soils. They've done some research in greenhouse settings, but in the garden setting, we don't see that. And when you look at the list of plants that are affected by juglone, it's really random. And so it's hard to say that that is the only thing. It's probably shade and root competition as much as it is this juglone that is excreted by the tree that can potentially impact the health of nearby plants. It's probably shade and root as much, if not more, than it is that chemical. So getting it out of the shade, getting it out of the root zone will help you establish any kind of plant.
All right. And in 30 seconds, Stephen Toledo says, my neighbor has a very old pear tree that he'll likely cut down soon. It has great tasting fruit. I'd like to try to root a cutting. What do you think? Is that a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, it's worth a try. I think semi-hardwood cuttings could work. So that would be early summer. You would collect those. Hardwood cuttings, I think, is better. That would be during the dormant season when you collect those. But you might not have an opportunity to do that. So try it out. See what happens.
Good luck, Steve and Aaron Style. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Adam Tome, thank you.
Thank you.
Adam Tome's turfgrass specialist and assistant professor of horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Style, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe.